we start our morning prayers, Shachris, with the pasuk, according to some we'll see, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov Mishkenosecha Yisrael. When you go to shul, when you enter the shul, you're supposed to say that pasuk, Matovu Alecha Yaakov. And this is found in the Siddur of Rav Amram Gaon, that in Taka, when his Shachris prayer, in his prayer book, which is one of the earliest prayer books that were committed to writing, the time of the Gaonim, starts with Matovu Alecha Yaakov. However, the Maharshal, who lived, I think, in the 1500s, questions this custom, and he says that one should not say this pasuk at the beginning of davening for two reasons. One is that it was said by Bilam HaRasha, and secondly, because he intended it to be a curse. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his Siddur, also says that it should not be said. And the Kolbo also does not have it in his order of the prayers. He deletes it also. So we have an argument whether this should be the beginning of our prayers or not. And the objections are basically because it was said by Bilam, and he intended it to be a curse. The Pardes Yosef adds another dimension. He says that the beginning of anything has to be extra special, because that forms, as we've explained many times, the foundation and the root of everything that comes afterwards. Therefore, to start our prayers with this sentence is even more problematic. And I found that, at least to address this objection, I found that Rashi in his Siddur and his descendant's Siddur called Machzer Vitri, they do quote this sentence, but not first. They preface other sentences first, and that this is the third or fourth sentence that's mentioned at the beginning of the prayers, Matovu. So at least it addresses that objection that a sentence that was said by Bilam HaRasha, who intended it to be a curse, should not be the first thing that we say when we come to shul, but after that, that it could be the second, third, or fourth thing, that would be okay. Now, in order to understand what the argument is here, should we say something that Bilam HaRasha said, who intended it to be a curse, or should we not? Let me tell you one possible answer, and then we'll see that there are other answers also. But one possible idea to explain this difference of opinion could be the following. And I think we mentioned this way back, maybe last year at some point. It says that when the Gemara speaks about who actually wrote down the various books of the Tanakh, so it says the following, Moshe Kosav Sifro, Moshe wrote his book, meaning the Torah. He was the scribe who wrote down the Torah dictated by God. Uparshas Bilam. And Moshe also wrote the Parsha of Bilam. So the Rishonim ask the obvious question. Parshas Bilam is in the Torah. So why is that mentioned separately? Moshe wrote his book, and he also wrote Parshas Bilam. So the Ritva says that that Parshas Bilam is not what we have in the Torah, which we learned last week in Parshas Balak. That are the prophecies of Bilam, that's part of the Torah. Parshas Bilam was another book that we don't have, that we lost. Wasn't a holy book. Moshe Rabbeinu happened to write another book of the prophecies of Bilam that were not contained in the Torah. Maybe some of the history of Bilam's life that Moshe Rabbeinu as a prophet was privy to. It was not commanded by God to write this down. Moshe wrote it on his own. And it was lost to us. So Moshe wrote the Sefer Torah. He also authored Parshas Bilam, which is a completely different book. The Brisker Rav, however, says a different idea. He says that Parshas Bilam means the Parsha of the prophecies of Bilam that's found in the Torah. But it mentions it separately because it's different than the rest of the Torah. That, what we learned last week, the prophecies of Bilam, is different than the entire rest of the Torah. Not that it's less holy or more holy, it's just different in how it was given over. The whole Torah was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu by God, and that's what made it Torah. Now, when we had people in the Torah that are quoted, and the Torah says what they said, it's not that they said it and it was put in the Torah the way they said, because most of these people didn't speak Hebrew. Paro is a good example, because Chazal say Paro didn't know Hebrew. So he couldn't have said what he said in Hebrew. He must have said it in Egyptian. When Paro spoke to Yosef, when Paro spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't speak in Hebrew. So when the Torah quotes him as saying things in Hebrew, it's not Paro's words. It's God paraphrasing, translating, saying what he wants us to know what Paro said. So it's directly the word of God. On the other hand, Bilam was a prophet on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. And when he received his prophecies, he received it on the level of the way Moshe Rabbeinu received his prophecies. And he probably got it in Hebrew, because prophecy is given in Hebrew. So Bilam must have understood Hebrew. When he explained it to Balak, he probably translated into their language, the language of Moab. But the prophecy itself was delivered, was transmitted to Bilam in Hebrew, in the exact way. And therefore, what Moshe Rabbeinu had to do was not that God dictated to him these words, but God told him, I am going to, in computer language, paste what Bilam said into the Torah, because I already gave it to him as a prophecy. And I'm going to tell you now to write down what he, to transfer the prophecies of Bilam into the Torah. So they were directed by God to be put into the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu. But they weren't given by God necessarily different than they were given to Bilam. So what Bilam got was transferred into the Torah. So when Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the rest of the Torah, he wrote it dictated by God, and that was what made it Torah. When he wrote down Parshas Bilam, he was copying something that already was on the level of Torah before it was put into the Torah. It was already a prophecy given by God on the same level as his prophecy. Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to put that into the Torah, word for word, as Bilam said it and got it. So Parshas Bilam is a separate thing. You could hear already the difference between saying Matovu Alecha Yaakov, is this Bilam's words? And Bilam was a Rasha and he intended to curse, and therefore how can you start your davening with the words of Bilam? If, as the Briska Rav says, that this was in fact the words of Bilam, it was the prophecy of Bilam, then there's a place to say at least that you shouldn't start davening with that. But if, as the Ritva says, it's no different than the rest of the Torah. Just as much as what Lavan said, and what Paro said, and what a host of other people said, was really God's word. God dictated it. They didn't say it like that. So therefore, here also, it's not Bilam's words, it's God's words. So what difference does it make who said it originally? But if it was transferred into the Torah, then there's at least an idea that maybe it's a little tainted and therefore shouldn't be the start of our prayers. In any case, that is an interesting sidelight. But even if Bilam said it, okay, still there are reasons why we would want to start our prayers with it, even though Bilam himself said it. There's an interesting Sfasemeth. The Sfasemeth says that originally the rabbis had wanted to put Parshas Balak, this parsha of Bilam and Balak, in Kriya Shema. That every day in davening, we would say it as a fulfillment of the command, Zechor asher yo'atz lecha Balak ben Tzippor, v'asher ono oso Bilam, that there's a mitzvah to remember the tremendous kindness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, that he changed Bilam's curses into a blessing and deterred Balak from harming us through Bilam. And there's a mitzvah to remember that. Says the Leif Simcha, a later Ger Rebbe, that we, and therefore to fulfill, but so why didn't they put it in davening? It's too long. Tircha de Tzibura. It would have made davening too long. So therefore, the rabbis had Rachmanis on us, and they didn't put it into Kriya Shema every day. But the Leib Simcha says, we fulfill this mitzvah by starting our prayers with Matov Olecha Yaakov. Because this is the ultimate blessing that Bilam said, and all the other blessings turned back to curses, and this one never turned back to be a curse, and therefore, in remembrance of this, of fulfillment of this mitzvah, of remembering what Bilam did and Balak did, we start our prayers with Matov. And therefore, it's a proper thing to do. The Baruch Sho'amar, Rav Baruch Epstein, who was also the author of the Torah Tmima, which probably is more well known to you, but he has a sefer on tefillah called Baruch Sho'amar. There he says the following. He says also, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that all of the brachos that Bilam intended as klalos, but God forced him to change it into a bracha, eventually reverted back to be curses. Except this one. Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkenosecha Yisrael remained a blessing, never turned back to a curse. And therefore, it is perhaps a proper thing. And therefore, this also counters one of the other objections. The other objection was that he intended it as a curse. Here, according to according to this Baruch Sho'amar and others, the reason it didn't turn back into a curse is because it was never intended to be a curse. This is one that Bilam intended to be a bracha. So the objection that we're starting something not only that Bilam Harasha said, but that he intended it for a klala doesn't apply to this sentence. This sentence was the exception. Here he intended it to be a bracha.
How do we know that?
That's what they say. They say the fact that it didn't turn back to be a klala is because it never was meant to be a klala. Okay. What? Because he was so inspired, it says, with how the Jewish people conducted themselves with modesty that he decided to bless them. He saw that the Rabban Shalom wants him to bless them. He's not going to be able to curse them anyway. So he said, you know, if I can't curse them, I might as well bless them. However, others learned that's not the case. That this also was intended to be a curse. The fact that it didn't turn back to a curse is something special. Some say the reason it didn't turn back to a curse is because since he blessed us to have shuls, bate knesios, bate medrashos, and yeshivas, or halecha Yaakov, mishkenosecha Yisrael, refers to yeshivas and shuls, as long as we have yeshivas and shuls, we are protected from curses. So therefore it didn't I'm not taking any questions. It didn't turn back into a, didn't turn back into a klala. But it was intended as a klala. And he says, some of them explain, what was the klala? When he said, what did he want to say? He said, how goodly are your yeshivas and your shuls? What did he want to say that was a curse? So, Reb Shimshon Astropoli says, the curse was the following. It says that the three temples were built in the merit of the three avos. The first temple was built in the merit of Avraham Avinu, the second one in Yitzchak's, and the third one, Yaakov. Now, Avraham Avinu had a son who was not a tzaddik, Yishmael, and Yitzchak had a son who was not a tzaddik, Esav. So their merit wasn't complete. And therefore, the first temple was destroyed, and the second temple was destroyed. The third temple will be built in the merit of Yaakov, whose all his children were tzaddikim. His merit was complete. The temple will never be destroyed, the third one. Okay. Now, the fact that the first two temples were destroyed is not a totally negative thing. Because the Gemara says that God took the temple as a mashkon, as a surety. That if the Jewish people will sin, he will take back his surety, his, what's the word I'm looking for? Collateral, and not destroy the Jewish people. He will vent his anger on sticks and stones and not on us. So the temple was destroyed instead of destroying us. Okay. Therefore, had the first temple been built in the merit of Yaakov, it couldn't have been destroyed. And then, if we became wicked, God would have to destroy us, and we would be the collateral, not the temple. That's what Bilam said. Matovu ohalecha Yaakov. Wouldn't it be great if the first Beis HaMikdash were built in the merit of Yaakov? And then, Mishkenosecha Yisrael. then the mashkon, the collateral, would be the Jewish people, not the temple. And they'll be destroyed. So that was Bilaam's backhanded compliment of us. The Chasam Sofer says also that Bilaam intended this to be a curse. What he says is very significant. He says it in the plural. Matovu ohalechoi, how beautiful are all your shuls, all your yeshivas. Meaning, there's not a community that doesn't have a proliferation of shuls and yeshivas. And sometimes it's not because there's no room for everybody in one shul. It's because, like the Jewish Robinson Crusoe, who was shipwrecked on an island alone, built two shuls. One, the one he davened in, and the one he didn't daven in. So that was Bilaam's intention. You should have a lot of shuls, so you have a lot of places you don't daven in. And that shows disunity amongst the Jewish people. And therefore, immediately after saying, Matovu, we say, Va'ani barov chazdecha ovo beisecha. We are coming into your home. We're not going into shul not to go into another shul. We're going for the positive reason, not for the negative reason. The Sifsei Kohen says another idea. He says that, as we said before, he said the reason, Bilaam intended to say you shouldn't have shuls and yeshivas. But as long as we have shuls and yeshivas, it can't turn back to a curse. So the shuls and the yeshivas prevent this from going back to a curse. The Toldos Yaakov Yosef says a different idea. He says all of our true prophets, the real prophets, constantly gave us Musar. They constantly castigated us. They constantly rebuked us. And Bilaam, on the other hand, he's saying everything good about us. Oh, your shuls, your batei midrash, one thing after another of praise. He said that is the sign of a false prophet. A false prophet wants you to think you're perfect and you don't need to correct anything, and that's the worst thing that a person can possibly have. The real prophets wanted us to improve. They wanted us to correct our mistakes, and therefore they rebuked us. But somebody who comes and tells you you're great, you're perfect, right, that's the first step towards destruction. The Reb Shimon Sofer says that the Shimon Sofer says what I just told you before. Why did I quote it in the name of... the Chasam Sofer says this. What I told you before about the fact that there should be many shuls or whatever, that was Reb Shimon Sofer. The Chasam Sofer, who was his grandfather, I think, or great-grandfather, said something different. He says that, unfortunately, we have a lot of shuls. Shuls are very holy places, but people don't respect shuls. They talk in shul. They do things in shul which are improper. And the same thing, Talmidei Chachamim don't always respect the Beis Medrash they learn in. And they also talk about things that aren't proper in a Beis Medrash. So the Chasam Sofer says that Bilaam intended you should have a lot of shuls and disrespect them. You should have a lot of yeshivas and disrespect them. So therefore, when we say Matovu, we immediately say, Vani barov chazdecha ovo beisecha eshtachadeh el heichal kodshecha birasecha. I treat the shul with awe and treat it with the proper respect, so Bilaam's klala will have no place to take effect. The another idea they say, the Pischei Torah says, that Bilaam intended the following. It says, whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to a shul and there's not a minyan there, he comes before the minyan comes, people are late, or they don't show up, then he gets angry. So Bilaam was looking for the Rabbanu Shlom to get angry, so he blessed us, we should have a lot of shuls, and we shouldn't show up on time. And then the Rabbanu Shlom will be angry, and Bilaam's klolas will be able to take effect. In any case, so that is the question, whether Bilaam intended this as a curse, or he didn't intend this as a curse. There's difference of opinion on both sides. Now, how about the fact that Bilaam HaRasha said this, right? How do we take away that objection? So here again, Rav Epstein says that it's bedafka because Bilaam said it, that we want to say it in the beginning of our prayers. He says the following reason. He said, somebody who loves you will be extra profuse with praising you, but the praise may not be all that true. But he exaggerates. On the other hand, a person who loves you minimizes your... Right, right. Okay. On the other hand, somebody who doesn't like you exaggerates when it comes to your shortcomings, but he's very, very tight-lipped when it comes to your praise. Bilam hated us with a passion. And look at the praise that he lavished on us. So we must be really praiseworthy. So therefore we start with Bilam's praise in the beginning of our davening, because it's the greatest sign that the Jewish people really deserve praise.
And
it's still, again, but it filtered through Bilam. Let me explain what that means. Every prophet prophesies what God told him, but it filters through that prophet and takes on his style. So a prophecy that filtered through Bilam is still Bilam's prophecy. Okay. In any case, he also says, Reb Epstein, a different thing we learn from here. Kabel es ha'emes m'misha amro. Accept the truth from whoever says it. It doesn't make a difference so much who said it. It could be the biggest rush of Bilam. But if he said something true, the truth is the truth. And it doesn't make a difference what packaging it's in. It's in the packaging of a Rasha, but it's the truth. You can accept it from him too. Right? The main thing is what was said, not who said it. Yeah. What? Well, the Torah put it in the Torah. Must be. But there are things. The Rambam quotes Aristotle. He quotes other non-Jewish, right? So does the Meiri. The Meiri quotes Arab philosophers. In things that they said that were true, they can be quoted too. They can be quoted too. I happen to hold the same thing when it comes to music. And I'm a Rosh Yeshiva held like that. There are people who say that all non-Jewish music is tainted. The people who wrote it had bad intentions or whatever, and it influences you. I don't think that's the case. That music, if it's music, I'm not a connoisseur of music, but if it's music that is uplifting, inspiring, soothing, classical music or whatever, it doesn't make a difference who wrote it. As long as it's not, wasn't intended to be avodah zarah, wasn't intended to be for religious, idolatrous purposes, there's nothing wrong with the music. On the other hand, music that leads you to feel like a native dancing around somebody boiling in a pot in Africa, right? Then I don't care if a guy with beard and payas sings it, right? That's not Jewish music. That is music that inspires and incites one to be hefker, to abandon, to a frenzy. That's not Jewish music. So it doesn't really make a difference who composed the music or who even sings it. It makes a difference what kind of music it is and what the result of that music is. Okay, in any case, so there's an inyan of kabelis or emes minisha amro. There's another idea, the Reishis Bikureis is a cute idea. It says that the Satan, he's an angel. He can only address and incite against one nation at a time. He can't do two things at the same time. And the Gemara says, therefore, whenever one of the Amoraim wanted to go somewhere dangerous, he took a goy with him. Because the Satan couldn't start up with both of them at the same time. So, same thing over here. We start our prayers, we don't want the Satan to start up with us. So we start our prayers with the words of a goy, Bilam, so the Satan can't start up with both of us at the same time. And he says, that's a reason also why by a chasana, by the badekin, by a wedding, we bless the Kala with the words of Lavan. Achoseinu atayili alfei revava. Same reason, he says. Once you mention Lavan's thing, you got a goy and a Jew together, the Satan won't start up with her. Okay. Okay, so now we have mentioned many reasons why the objections to Matovu don't stand. Right? Why it's not a problem that Bilam said it, for one of the many reasons we said. It's not a problem that he intended it as a curse, because either he didn't intend it as a curse, or it never reverted back to a curse. And the fact that we start with it is therefore not a problem either. So the Maisa, though, why do we? There may not be any reason not to, but why should we? We have so many other sentences we could start our prayers with. Why Dafka pick this one? So let me tell you a few ideas that I was thinking of, and I think that they all have some merit to them. The first idea is, what do we learn from Bilam HaRasha? That words have a tremendous effect. Because God went to a tremendous bother to see to it that Bilaam didn't curse us. Why don't we just say, sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never harm you? Because it's not true. Words can harm you tremendously. More than sticks and stones. And had Bilaam been able to curse us, and God did not interfere, the curse would have taken effect. It took special divine intervention to prevent Bilaam from cursing us in order that we shouldn't be harmed. At the Tells of Rosh Hashiva compares it to an atomic bomb. Somebody knows how to make an atomic bomb, and he knows how to drop it on a people. Are we going to say, well, God runs the world, and if he doesn't want the atomic bomb to hurt you, it won't. God runs the world, but he runs it according to a certain natural order. And unless you deserve tremendous miracles, if somebody knows how to detonate an atomic bomb, it's going to hurt you. And if he makes it, instead of detonating and exploding, but, you know, gushing colored water, right, it's a miracle. Tremendous miracle. Same thing over here. Bilaam knew how to create a curse. He knew how to orchestrate it. And if God didn't intervene, it would have harmed us. So, therefore, what do we learn from that? That speech is a potent force. So before we daven every morning, we mention this sentence to remind us how much you can accomplish with speech. Bilaam intended curse, and it would have harmed us. And therefore, if we intend blessing, it could help us. Not only that, we learned another thing from Bilaam, that God, in the end, controls our speech. So therefore, even though we think we're the ones who are davening, but we can call on God to give us some help, and that's what we do in the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei. Hashem Sfasai Tiftach. God, open my mouth. You, even though you gave me free choice, and you gave me the ability to speak, but you're still in control. So help me. So therefore, speech is an extremely potent medium, and God can give you help in making your speech even more powerful for the good. So at the beginning of our davening, we mention this. That's one idea I was thinking of. That's why we start with this sentence. Another idea. Lamaisa, we are in Golus. And this sentence, I think, was added only in Golus. It wasn't said when the Beis HaMikdash was around. The Rav Amram Gon, obviously, was way after Churban Beis HaMikdash. He has it in his Siddur. And there's a reason why this sentence was added as the beginning of our prayers in Golus. Because the Gemara says, Miyom Shenechrav Beis HaMikdash, from the time that Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Afal Pi Shishari Tfila Ninalu, Shari Dima Lo Ninalu. The gates of prayer have been locked. The gates of tears are still open. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't pray. Every red-blooded yeshiva bacher knows that you can get through locked gates if you really want to. Climb over them, climb under them, pick the lock. There are ways of getting through locked things. But it's more difficult. So the gates of prayer are locked, so it takes a lot with more difficulty to get through those gates. And this sentence tells us, however, that even though the Beis HaMikdash has been destroyed, Matovu Alecho Yaakov, or Alecho refers to the Beis HaMikdash when it was standing. Mishkin Osecho Yisrael refers to the Beis HaMikdash when it's destroyed. But God's presence is still there. And we know that God's presence still exists in the destroyed Beis HaMikdash. And he gave us a substitute. Batei Mikdash Ma'at. He gave us little Batei Mikdash that are called shuls and yeshivas. Those are the Mikdashei Ma'at. So we're not totally lost. Even though we're in Golus, God's presence still is found by the Beis HaMikdash, and that presence extends itself into miniature Batei Mikdash world over that are called shuls and Batei Midrashos. And there is another aspect to this that Aryeh Leib Frumkin, in his Siddur, says that this is a chizik for us. We should look back at our patriarch Yaakov. He also suffered a lot from Esav. He came out holding Esav's heel. That's why he was called Yaakov. Matovu Alecha Yaakov, even when we're in Golus, and we're suffering at the heel, under the heel of the Goyim. But in the end, Mishkin Osecha Yisrael, Yaakov persevered and overcame all of that. And the Jewish people also will persevere and overcome all of that. So at the beginning of our prayers, when the prayers should remind us that we're in Golus, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash anymore. Prayer is more difficult now. We start with what Bilam said, Matovu Alecha Yaakov. Even when you're Yaakov, eventually you'll be Israel. And even when you're Yaakov, the Ribbono Shel Olam is still there. His presence is still even in the destroyed Beis HaMikdash, and it spreads to the Batei Mikdash Ma'at, the small shuls and yeshivas. And I found that the Matei Moshe, an early commentator, in his Siddur, he has the following. Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael. That's what our prayers start with. Immediately after there is the following pasuk. The next pasuk is not what we say, Vani Barov Chazdecha Avo Beisecha. But it says, Ko Amar Hashem, Lochein Ko Amar Hashem, Hirchaktim Bagoyim, Vehafitzosim, Vearts Barotzos, Ve'ei Elohem L'Mikdash Mi'at, Be'artzos Asher Bo Shama. Exactly that sentence. I scatter them amongst the nations of the world, but I will be with them in their small mikdash in all the lands of their exile. So it's exactly this point. We start with Matovu to bring out this point. So that's the second reason why we start with Matovu, in order to emphasize that even though we are in Golus, and we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and prayer is more difficult, but as Bilam said, even when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, God's presence doesn't leave us, and it extends itself into the Batei Mikdash Ma'at. The another idea, which I think is a primary idea, is the following. The Sheiris Menachem says a very interesting idea, which I want to expand upon. He says that when we come into shul, we say this pasuk because the pasuk really, according to many, doesn't refer to shuls or yeshivas. That is an alternate translation, an alternate commentary. The main thing that Chazal say that this pasuk applies to is the Jewish home. Matovu Alecha Yaakov. In the desert, you lived in tents, in sukkahs, and your tents were goodly. And when you come to Eretz Israel, you live in regular dwellings, and they'll also be goodly. Why? Because they're modest. What did Bilam see? That the doorways of the Jewish people did not face each other. They staggered their doorways. They didn't violate other people's privacy. They respected each other's privacy. And that's the tznius, the modesty of the Jewish home. And he says, therefore, when you come to shul, you remember that things don't start with the shul. They start with the home. You're coming from home into a shul. Recognize the fact that it's not the shul that's the main place where God's presence is. It's the home that you left. Now I want to expand on that. And that is, I always like to say that the main, what's it called, in every institution that we have, Beis HaKnesses, Beis HaMedrash, Beis HaSefer, all start with the bayis. All start with the home. If you don't have a bayis, then you don't have a Knesset or a Medrash or a Sefer. It all starts with the home. And that's why, where is God's presence really devout? Ish ve'isha shechina shriya b'neim, amongst the family. And it's hinted to that. Because where does God's presence devolve in the temple? Mibein shnei akruvim, between the two kruvim. One was male, one was female, and they symbolized also husband and wife. And they have the faces of children. There you have the whole family. That's where God's presence is amongst the family. And we once explained the Medrash. The Medrash says, L'mishpichoseihem yotzu min ateva. Mikan sheyotzi mibeis hakneses mishpachos mishpachos. From here we learn that when you leave shul, you should leave by family. Family should leave together. What's the idea? It says when Noach left his teva, they left by family. Now the word teva means in rabbinic Hebrew, the Aron Kodesh. The Aron Kodesh was called the teva. We call it the Aron Kodesh. They called it the teva. So the sentence therefore can be read, L'mishpichoseihem yotzu min ateva. When you leave the Aron Kodesh, when you leave shul, leave by family. What's the deeper meaning? Noach was inundated with a flood that was out to destroy him. So how did he escape it? He didn't go somewhere else. He was in the floodwaters, but he was insulated, that the floodwaters couldn't come in. That was the Teva. So we also are inundated by evil influences, by evil all around us. You can't run away from it. So how do you escape it? By locking yourself in a Teva, in a insulation, whether it's watertight, where the waters can't come in. What are those Tevas? Shuls, yeshivas, seminaries, they hold those waters out. But you can't live in a shul or a yeshiva or a seminary your whole life. You have to leave it. So how can you leave it and still be protected? That's what the Medrash says. L'mishpechoseyam, if your family has the same values and standards as the shul and the yeshiva and the seminary, then they become the teva. They become the insulation, even if you leave those institutions. So therefore, when we come to shul, we want to remember, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, it's not the shul that's the ikar. It's taking what's in the shul and transferring it to your home. And realizing, I just came from a home, and now I'm coming to a shul, I have to bind those two things together. So we say, Matovu Alecha Yaakov, when we come to shul. Another idea, the Shalnei Shmuel says, O'alecha Yaakov refers to the aspect of a shul of gathering together, the social aspect of a shul. And that's a very important aspect, right? Communities are held together by the social aspect of a shul. But the major part of a shul is Mishkanosecha Yisrael, the spiritual place of prayer. So when we come to shul, we make it clear that even though the social aspect is very important, but it is secondary to the spiritual aspect, so keep your mouth shut and don't socialize during davening. Another idea is that people usually get up and learn before davening. And Ohale Yaakov refers to Torah, and Mishkanosecha Yisrael refers to davening. Now the Gemara says that somebody who hurries up to stop learning so he can daven, his davening is an abomination. Because davening is only basically pertains to worldly things, temporal things. And Torah is something that is eternal. So one should not hurry up and stop learning in order to daven. Therefore, when you come to shul, where you're going to start learning, you say this pasuk, Matovu Alecha Yaakov. The main thing is O Alecha Yaakov, the place where you learn Torah. And only afterwards, Mishkanosecha Yisrael, so you don't quickly stop your learning in order to be able to daven. And even though you have a time for davening and time for learning, one should not do the davening at the expense of the learning, but as an extension of the learning. And with that, I want to extend it to another idea. Davening, we daven for very temporal things. Parnasa, health, and all the other things that people need in this world. And therefore, we have to put it into perspective. Perspective is, Ohalecha Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu looked at the material things in this world as an ohel, as temporary. Those weren't the main things. Mishkanosecha were the spiritual things. Those were the major set things, eternal things in this world. So therefore, when we start davening, and we're going to ask for all these temporal things, we should put them in their place, and know that they're very important as a means to reach an end, but they're not the end in themselves. And we come to shul so we can daven with a tzibur, with a community. And we want to point out that idea. There are some that explain this sentence, Matovu Alecha Yaakov Mishkanosecha Yisrael, that they refer to different groups of Jews. Ohalecha Yaakov are the Jews who combine Torah learning with a profession, with an occupation. And they set time for learning Torah, but they earn a living. Then there's Mishkanosecha Yisrael, the Jews who are devoted totally to Torah. Torasim umnasim, the people who sit and learn all the time, right? Like Shevet Levi. And both of them have to exist together. Each one respecting the other, supporting the other, and so on. And the same thing goes with what's it called? Some say that Ohalecha Yaakov refers to the women. Mishkanosecha Yisrael refers to the men. Men, women, everybody has their role, have to respect each other, and be able to work together. And the Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer says an interesting thing. It says that Bilam saw she'ein pischehen mechuvanim ze etzel ze, that their doors weren't open one to the other. He gives an interesting explanation of that. says everybody has their Pesach, the place where the Yetzer Hara gets them. The Pesach Atas Robeis. The Yetzer Hara has its entrance to different places, to different people. Some people are weak in this, but strong in something else. They speak Lashon Hara, but they're great in Shabbos. Some people are great in Kashrus, and not so great in Shabbos. Everybody has their Pesach, their entrance way to the Yetzer Hara. What did Bilam see? That no two Jews have the same entrance way. Where I'm strong, you may be weak. But where I'm weak, you may be strong. So when we all get together and daven together, we're pretty much perfect. Because each one compensates for the weakness of the other one. And lastly, this pasuk represents all of the Batei Mikdash that were and will be. Ohalecha Yaakov refers to the Mishkan in the desert. Mishkan Osecha Yisrael refers to Shiloh. And then some say it refers to the first Beis HaMikdash, the second Beis HaMikdash. But we say, Ribbono Shel Olam, Lamaisa, we've gone through many destructions, but Vaniv Berov Chasdecha Ovo Beisecha. We're hoping that one day we will graduate from this little Beis HaMikdash and be able to come to Beisecha, your Bayis HaGodol VaHakadosh, which will be built, V'mheira V'yoneinu B'viyas Kol Tzedek, V'mheira V'yoneinu.